Today we are celebrating science. The eminent cell researcher, as I mentioned, Alan Mackay-Sim, has been named Australian of the Year. But as it's Australia Day, we've got a little more time on our hands than usual. Important word there is time. It's a chance to reflect on another scientific concept, the true nature of time. And that's exactly what the renowned theoretical physicist and professor of physics at Columbia University, Dr. Brian Greene, will be doing when he visits Australia in March. In his public talks, Brian Greene will be exploring the way science understands time. Brian Greene will also be discussing what art, philosophy, and spirituality have to tell us about time. He joins us from New York this morning. Brian Greene, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Oh, my pleasure.
Can we put it in a cultural sense first, this notion of time, in a world where we now know that time is not absolute and that everything is relative? Why do we have so little of it? Why are we so often so time poor?
Well, that's a question of human existence. That's the one we've pondered since the very beginning. But the striking thing from the standpoint of physics is time isn't what you think it is. Time is this thing that's beating second after second on your watch. It feels like it's the same for all of us. When Einstein taught us that time is very much in the eye of the beholder, depending on how fast you move and the gravity you experience, time elapses at a radically different rate for you compared to everybody else.
And my brain struggles when I read these things and try to understand them. And science has struggled over the centuries, and theories on time have switched. Has anything much changed since Einstein told us that time is not absolute?
Well, the big puzzle at the moment is to really understand the nature of time in the sense of where it comes from and its fundamental qualities. And the best laboratories that we have for studying these issues are black holes, these immense structures in space that warp the fabric of space and time. And right now, some of the cutting-edge research is trying to, in some sense, use mathematics to peer inside a black hole to figure out, does time stop, for instance, at the center of a black hole? Is a black hole as a gateway to another universe? These are the kinds of ideas that are certainly post-Einsteinian, inspired by Einstein's work, but are at the frontier today.
Does time stop where time began? These are questions we sort of bring into our everyday language all the time. We talk about, you know, the time of our lives. We talk about time immemorial. We talk about since when time began. So we're really quite consumed with these theories of time that the scientists, as you say, in the biggest labs, you know, have been working on for decades, and now they're peering into the black holes to see if they can answer some of these basic questions. Are they getting closer?
Well, it's a difficult question to give a precise answer to. We feel like we're getting closer. We are doing calculations today that would have, I think, made Einstein extremely happy, would have surprised him with the depth of understanding. But, you know, we care about these things for a very flat-footed reason, right? I mean, it's intellectually interesting, but we all know we're going to die, right? We all have a finite amount of time. Mm. That's why time is the most precious thing that we have. And the goal really is to look into the nature of reality and parse that out and to really figure out whether this is something that we, in a way, impose on reality to organize experience so that we have the past, the present, and the future. We can think about the world in a way that makes sense. Or is this something stitched into the fibers of reality itself? Is that the true nature of time? We certainly do not yet know the answer to questions like that.
If we don't know the answer to questions about that, how can we then accept the finding from the European Space Agency Planck mission, which found in 2013 that the universe is 13.82 billion years old? Can we really be that precise? And what does it mean to tell us that?
It's a strange state of affairs that we don't really know what time is, and yet we can measure it with fantastic precision. Right? That's a weird state of affairs, but that is the situation. So we have these devices that we trust to be able to measure time to tiny fractions of a second. We have mathematics that allows us to look at the universe like the European Space Agency did with satellite-borne telescopes, take a snapshot of the universe, understand using math how it evolves, wind that cosmic film back to the beginning and be able to determine how far back in time we'd have to go to get to the Big Bang itself. We can do all of that, and there is no controversy that we are doing it right. Strangely, though, if you turn to me and say, so what is it that you're measuring? What is this thing called time? I can beat around the bush and say, well, it's that thing that allows change to occur. It's that quality of the universe that allows things to evolve. But that's certainly incomplete. We can measure it. We don't really know what it is.
You're listening to RM Breakfast. Our guest this morning is Dr. Brian Green, theoretical physicist. As you can hear, he's coming to Australia in March, holding public events in theatres to talk about time. That's what you're going to be doing, Brian. You're going to be trying to explain all of this to us. People will be asking you questions, I guess, and you're going to be able to try and help us understand that. And I was struck by the fact that you're going to be joined on stage by, I think what sounds like a fairly unlikely partner in your duet, rapper and spoken word artist Hugo the Poet. Now, I'm just wondering, let's hear a bit of Hugo the Poet, and then I'll ask you why he's joining you.
But we are celestial bodies casting tiny eclipses, and so are your problems on the Mobius strip topography of your time's ellipses. They're now in the bright, and so their shadows define, and like the yin and the yang, summer, winter, days balanced with the night. In the darkness we can see the stars that randomly ignite, because casting a shadow is just a consequence of standing in the light.
Hugo the Poet there, he raps a lot about light and the universe. So how did this combo come about, Brian? Do you know Hugo? Do you like his raps?
So I do not know him well, but I'm getting to know him. So this will be certainly an interesting collaboration that really speaks to something that to me is vital. For a long time, science has stood on the outskirts of culture. It's been this otherworldly stuff that most people don't really want to have that much to do with. And through a variety of means, I at least have dedicated part of my life to bringing science right into the center of culture. You know, we're doing an event in Brisbane, the World Science Festival, which brings theater and art and science all together. And then the tour that you're referring to, you know, we're going to Melbourne, we're going to Sydney with Hugo the Poet. And those are going to be events that allow people to, in a sense, feel these ideas, not just have their head hurt on these discussions of space and time and matter and energy in the universe, but to really feel like they're having, I don't know, a full body experience with these rather esoteric ideas.
Brian Green, it's Australia's National Day here, and in her Australia Day lecture, eminent quantum physicist Michelle Simmons expressed concern about attempts to what she described as the feminization, or I guess the dumbing down of the teaching of physics in order to try and boost the number of girls studying science. Let me just play a little of what you had to say in that Australia Day address.
One of the few things that horrified me when I came to Australia was to discover that several years ago, the high school physics curricula was feminized. In other words, to make it more appealing to girls, our curricula designers substituted formula with essays. What a disaster. From the students coming through, I see little evidence this has made any difference. And indeed, I see many students complaining that the physics curricula has left them ill-equipped for university. In my experience, there is a big cost in this type of thinking. When we reduce the quality of education that anyone receives, we reduce the expectations we have of them.
That's quantum physicist Michelle Simmons speaking in her Australia Day lecture. I wonder if you have a view on this concern about this, you know, substituting formulas with essays, or the dumbing down of physics. The counter concern, of course, is how to get more girls studying the STEM subjects. What's your view and what's your experience in America? Has the pendulum swung too far one way or the other?
Well, I'm certainly not familiar with the program that was being referred to, substituting essays for formulae, but I will say that we have a job ahead of us, which is to make science available, accessible, and exciting to everybody. And to me, the most important thing along those lines is role models. I mean, if kids have a role model, if girls have a role model, boys have a role model that they look up to as someone that, yeah, I love what they do, I want to follow what they do, I want to carry on the work that they're doing, that's really how you can get kids fired up about science. I've never found in my own experience the need to teach boys and girls, men and women, any differently.
Okay.
I have a wonderful graduate student right now, one of the best I've had, a woman pushing the frontiers of string theory. So I don't know that those measures that were referred to are in any way necessary, but we do need to pay attention to bring everybody into the fold.
Can I just ask you finally about events in your own country, the inauguration of President Donald Trump, the official White House website deleted nearly all mentions of climate change immediately. Before the presidential election last year, you said that Donald Trump didn't have a science policy. It seems clear now there is a policy, and it's pretty sceptical about the science of anthropogenic climate change. Are you concerned about science and the fate of science and the funding for science, I suppose, in America in this sort of these post-factual times?
Yeah, am I concerned about it? Yeah, this is incredible developments that I never would have thought possible. And it means that we scientists have to be so attentive and so vigilant to everything that's going on. I never thought we'd need to protect basic facts about how the world is and basic data about what has transpired in the world around us. But obviously, there's an Orwellian characteristic that's being driven by this new administration where even the most basic truths are being subject to revision. So, yeah, am I concerned about it? Yes, but I see it as a real opportunity for scientists to step in and really ensure that the basic facts of existence are respected.
Brian Green, thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Brian Green, theoretical physicist, professor of physics at Columbia University, and a little bit of a celebrity scientist, really. He's going to be in Australia in March for several events, exploring, as we heard, the nature of time, seen from the perspectives of science, art, philosophy, and spirituality. We'll put those details on our website. You're listening to RN Breakfast. It's 8:17.